Hello, everyone.
Hello.
And welcome to Reckless at Deadlands.
No.
Wait, I didn't know we were using a different system.
I actually really enjoy the Deadlands system.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, it was actually a very good time. And I, after naming it this, I think I made the map before I knew that the Deadlands system existed. And we'd already named it on the, you know, on the podcast and in the official material, so...
We got it first. TM.
TM. Hello, everyone. I am GM Nathan here around my, we'll just say like nervous, skeptical, questioning players. If I may guess as to kind of your state of emotions, questioning, are we going to live? And also, what is the gruesome way Nathan is going to kill our characters? Let's have our Walking Dead introduce themselves, starting with.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pals, Mango and Junior. And Checkers is currently a shriveled up little raisin in the corner.
Immediately.
Yep. We entered the Deadlands with all these different preparations. We had all these things we were going to do, and none of it worked out. And we flew just a tiny little bit into the Deadlands, and all of our food and water disappeared. So Checkers is just like, I guess I'm old now.
Oh boy.
I'm old and dry.
I just Googled like dried frogs hibernating.
No, I don't think I want to see that.
Y'all, it's distressing.
That's Checkers right now.
There's not many. It seems like most frogs stay wet while hibernating, but there's a couple like mummified frogs. And it's distressing. And I encourage all our listeners to look at it right now. And then also a picture of Checkers at the same time.
And to my right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human asterisk cleric asterisk of the Arcana Domain. And Val is pacing back and forth. It starts at a slow pace, and then suddenly gets faster. She's thinking to herself, and then she's mumbling out loud, and then slightly in a panic pitch is like, this is not what we thought would happen. I made a list of things that I prepared for, and then none of those were things that I prepared for. What do you mean all of these things are going wrong? This was not on my to-do list.
What I love about this is that you didn't specify what your peak pace was. And so I'm imagining all of that harried material was just said, literally arms pumping like a Terminator running from one side of the ship to the other because you have just escalated your speed so quickly.
Exactly. And across the table for me.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing Selv Asterlin, the dragonborn monk who is a silver dragonborn and pretty much based in cold. Like he breathes cold. He that's kind of the environment he's from. So the white hot barren desert is exactly the place that he don't want to be.
No.
I mean, great news is that you're a silver dragonborn, so you're basically our signal mirror anytime we get lost.
That's true. That is true. Unless...
Why are you complicating this?
Yeah, right?
Well, so you've been describing the Deadlands and everything like that, and what comes to my mind is there's a place called White Sands, and I believe it's actually a missile base in New Mexico, I want to say, where it is gypsum sand, and that's kind of what I am... picturing. So listeners, if you want to go ahead and Google that, you will have a very clear picture, at least in my head, what I am picturing this place to look like. And if that's the case, gypsum is also kind of shiny. So
I'm counting on you being 6 foot.
And also taller
than the tallest.
I could actually, I suppose, breathe into the air and give a little signal, but all that is kind of in Selv's head, because to my right is.
Hi, everyone. I'm David, and I play Kaskrin Brightmane, the Dwarven Sorcerer. I want to say Kaskrin is, he's got all of his, non-magical stuff on. Like, he is about as prepared as he's going to be, and he is, almost staring down the Deadlands as, I don't want to say his, the final challenge, but it's just,
The word final's been thrown around a lot, I feel like.
We still got a lot of stuff to do after this.
We do have to survive. We can end the campaign if that's what you guys want. That's fine, but...
There's still an Ultra Giant after this.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just like, he's as ready as he's going to be. Mm-hmm. He's trying not to panic to see if his, like, secret stash of, like, hidden goodies was turned to sand, too. He's trying not to think about that. He's only looking forward.
And I think in your defense and in his, I mean, this is by far the craziest shit you guys have done. Like, in terms of places you have gone intentionally, easily the craziest. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a level up of adventuring that you guys are doing as you head your way to the, not just the Deadlands, but the crater of Narhasar, which is where Sunfall happened.
I feel like if we could somehow lure the Ultra Giant into the Deadlands, the problem might solve itself.
Counterpoint, this is where the Ultra Giants came from.
It might get stronger.
It might love this.
Counterpoint, it might decide to live here.
Oh, yeah. This is nicer. Screw all that smashing civilization.
Right. Everything's
nonsense.
Already pre-smashed. You know, maybe it's a... Maybe they're just trying to get back home.
Unfortunately, Ultra Giants are the ultimate hustler and are never content to settle anywhere that is pre-smashed. So, unfortunately, that may or may not be something that you will have to contend with should you survive the adventure.
Not if
you
keep saying this is the final adventure.
For your final adventure, guys, you're in the Deadlands. All you can see in front of you is this truly alien sight of perfectly flat white sand. You guys have interacted with this sand previously as you're just kind of, you know, poking it. I think at least one of you, I'm not going to look at or name or point at one of you, maybe tasted it just as part of normal scientific recourse.
Could have been anyone.
Could have been. We don't know. And it did have some strange properties to it. It fell perfectly down as if, you know, pulled by gravity and exerted by no other force. Nothing cast a shadow across it from any direction. And, well, you know, you got kind of just bad vibes from it. But that was just a few feet in. And you guys are above it in the Sky Stalker, which is what you hoped would be a good thing, a safer thing. But, like, you've been floating over it for, like, a minute. And things are already going differently than you expected. All your food is gone. All your water is evaporated.
Hence the raisin.
Yeah.
Hence the raisin.
Yep. I'm going to be useless this whole adventure, guys.
And just a clarification for the food, it was actually turned to some kind of dust, right?
It was turned into specifically the white sand.
Okay, that's what I wanted to. Yes.
Yes.
All right.
I will also say the grass that was once your deck, because this has been a strange adventure, your final adventure has been very strange, has dried out and died. I'll save you a little trial and error here. No non-magical fire can be lit. You see all five of the Joes desperately trying to strike matches on their very fancy nautical-themed pipes. No. No match lights. And the air feels different up here. You've been cruising along at a few hundred, you know, feet up above, which is kind of the classic, we're far enough away from pretty much everyone that we're not hiding necessarily, but nothing really is going to bother us from the ground here. Several hundred feet up. It feels a little difficult to breathe up here. Hmm. The atmosphere feels thin. You just have to kind of concentrate on what you're doing a little bit more, if that makes sense. Just a little bit of brain fog, to borrow the parlance of our times. Captain Silvertooth's voice rings out. All right, we're across. Check in, crew. Sound off.
Air.
Air. Everyone was waiting for Admiral Captain Checkers.
Checkers raises his little shriveled brown hand.
Good gods! Will someone please assist the Admiral Captain? Sir, what do you need done to fix the grotesque sight before me? I'm sorry.
Quickly,
sir.
Everybody spit on him.
Sand.
You hear eight different people go.
joking.
Kaskrin sounds off and is also like trying to tend to Checkers, who is like Voldemort.
Yeah.
you scoop him in a little blanket.
Yeah. Val, did you prepare create food and water for today?
Can I say Val did? I have it. I just have
it. It is you guys literally just, this is the first thing happening in the day. So you guys have not had time to prepare your spells yet. Or at least I am fine with saying that you when Checkers came to wake you up, you're like, well, I should go up on deck first, not do my hour of praying to change my spell slots or whatever. So
I'll give me an hour.
Checkers raises a little shriveled hand and just says, I'm not suggesting that we turn around or anything, but maybe we want to take a quick break to figure out what to do from this point. Because I'm struggling, guys.
we're only like 50 feet in.
The captain kind of shakes himself off of just staring horrified at your mummified body. I, Captain, turning about. And you guys make a pretty tight turn. Again, it's a fairly maneuverable ship, all things considered. And kind of go back around. And the food doesn't come back.
Oh, no.
The water doesn't come back.
But now, hopefully, anything that Val is able to create will stick around long enough that we could revive Checkers.
I can create water. I can't create food.
That's still pretty good, though. I'm fine with just that one. Honestly, that's a more important one, I think, right now.
Admiral Captain, do you need water for your condition, sir?
Yeah, that'd be great, actually.
Crew, if we're to continue, I have a dire suggestion to make. Unfortunately, we may be forced to consume frog tea in the coming days, but we'll survive. We're a tough crew, right, men? And the Joes and the Tims... Yeah.
I can create it multiple times a day, so maybe we don't have to do the frog tea part.
I defer to the Admiral Captain.
How many gallons is
I
your
need
barrel?
It. I don't know.
I need it.
This is the SpongeBob episode. Yep. Yeah.
So just a couple quick questions.
Sure. Take your time, Jonathan.
Just a couple?
Yeah. So I'm imagining that we've kind of settled a little bit outside the edge of the Deadlands.
Yep.
When we were told we were coming here, we had all these different preparations planned. And as soon as we flew in, basically it all went south. You know, all of our stuff dried up. Nothing that we thought would happen. And stuff just seems to be going wrong immediately.
Yes. And so I would say, like you said, probably some people had ventured in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Some of these things were probably known to you guys. The no fires would have definitely been the case. But, you know, hey, you have magical means of fires and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, in terms of the food spoiling, certainly this quickly. Again, you guys have moved across this barrier before, and you still had all of your stuff with you. At least the timing of it is new. You don't know if that would happen over the course of days or hours or further in or certain thresholds or something, but you were hoping you have a little more time at least.
I would like to check, and I don't have, Self does not have any of this on him, but I'll ask.
Is everybody's potion still, you know, in liquid form?
Are they?
They are indeed.
Nice.
So if I'm understanding things correctly, the magical stuff that we have is more or less safe. But the non-magical stuff we have is either dried up or turned to dust in some way.
I would say the one of the few things that you could probably still find in your hold amidst now boxes of dust would be a few casks of alcohol that were loaded in.
I see where this is going.
But we're gonna have a fun adventure now.
All water and all food is gone.
So not necessarily everything that contains water.
Correct.
But that, okay.
So your potions are fine. Again, magical things seem to be relatively unaffected.
That must be some good alcohol then.
Engines, yes, exactly. They make the strong stuff here. And the engines are still going. And presumably you could send a Tim down who would report that water seems to be fine.
So, okay, so like the fire elemental water is still fine.
Correct.
Okay.
Sealed inside of a heavily ruined, magically protected bubble, essentially.
Okay. I'm sorry. Create food and water is a third level spell.
Ooh. Really?
So I can do that.
Okay.
I can create 45 pounds of food and 30 gallons of water on the ground or in containers within range, enough to sustain up to 15 humanoids or 5 steeds for 24 hours. The food is bland but nourishing and spoils if uneaten after 24 hours.
And do you have a...
Spoiler, it'll be less than that.
The water is clean and doesn't go bad. Says it right here.
Frog tea.
Yeah.
Doesn't go bad.
Nope.
You get 10 gallons.
Okay. And before we came here, we had a good understanding of what our destination was. It was this place that Sunfall took place. The crater of Narhasar, I think you called it.
Yes. Former capital city of the Pentarchy.
Do we have a sense of how far that was or how long we might expect to travel there?
Originally, you were probably thinking day and a half, 2 days.
Okay.
But with your kind of souped up engines with the resummoned fire elemental, it's day and a half today. Like, you'd probably definitely be traveling throughout one whole day.
Yeah.
You'd get there sometime tomorrow, basically, if you're flying straight there.
But there's not a chance of all of us, like, starving on the way there, basically.
No.
How about, this is Val saying as she's like collecting herself from her Terminator strides in panic. She's worked off the excess stress. What if I cast a spell, create food and water here? We eat heartily, drink as much as we can. It is magical food and drink, so we can proceed, move on, see what the leftovers do. And then test it from there.
Yeah, I like that plan. Why don't we fill up and we'll try this again. Take two.
The burden, I need you to expertly organize these empty containers.
Understood. Happy to. And then just zips down the undead individual who really thrives on organizing. Mm-hmm. Zips down and starts. You start hearing like splintering as crates are opened. And you see a trail of dust start to exit various portholes of your ship.
Great. When they are done organizing, Val will cast Create Food and Water and create 45 pounds of food and 30 gallons of water in containers within range. The range is 30 feet.
I'm also, at this point...
Ride my mouth, please.
Fine. I'm fine with contain... The Sky Stalker can be a container.
It specifically says on the ground, though, too. And I'm just like, I don't want my water on the ground. Thank you.
Can I try something real fast, too?
Yeah, absolutely.
So as part of this, Checkers can cast Goodberry.
Mm-hmm.
And what that looks like is he just summons a little pouch with frog-shaped fruit snacks in it.
Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah.
But I'm going to try to do this while inside the Deadlands, just to see if it's any more difficult there. Or what might happen to the Goodberries if they're in the Deadlands first.
Yep, love that.
So, and what happens is, like, Checkers basically stands on the bow of the ship with his arms held out while we just kind of slowly approach the edge of the Deadlands.
Feeling like King Gilder of the World.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as Checkers gets across, he just immediately starts shriveling again, but quickly casts Goodberry and tries to see if it works.
Luckily, the captain is extremely precise in his ability to control his ship. And so it is just the front of the ship, so you're not losing all of the water and stuff that has just been created with a third level spell slot. So you go in and you cast Goodberry as part of this. The Goodberries appear in your hand.
Hmm. Okay.
I kind of want to try something also. I don't know how this is going to go, but for control water, one of the options is I can freeze a certain, you know, up to 5 cubic feet of water.
Sorry, I just had the image of you freezing checkers.
Well,
hibernation.
With him and
not exactly, but my, as in Steve's experience with playing this game and magic, is that magic tends to be very specific. So something that could happen to water might not happen to ice. And so I would like to just freeze a little bit in my hands and then have that, you know, as part of the going over the Deadlands and see if that stays ice or if it, you know, turns to dust.
Does anyone else have quick experiments that they'd like to hang over the bow of the ship? And I say this earnestly.
I think Val would put a little bit of the magical food she made just to see what happens.
We're doing science here.
Yeah.
The bones... put a finger.
Again, the bones has gone, at least
that's
both members of the bones
have
gone through.
Val's very worried about them.
And roll me either Arcana or Religion check.
12.
From your examination, the Seeker and the Burden both seem fine. But as you well know, this is extremely complicated magic and not really your area of expertise other than you've been around them.
But their armbands fall off.
Oh, man.
It begins.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it seems fine, but you're almost basing it off of, well, I've been around them for like a day or two and been around other members of the bones and they seem like they're the same shape, so that's good. Mm-hmm. And the armbands are there, so that's good. All right, keep moving those boxes, please.
Casperin's going to take like a non-magical wooden spoon and also hold it out, and he's wondering if it becomes more brittle or easier to break.
So, checkers, your good berry that you are casting in the Deadlands appears in your hand and makes it back out. Val, your pile, handful, whatever of is it what is the
it's
food?
Just bland food.
It's Soylent Green. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Like it's
bummer.
Hold on. It says it specifically. What is it?
I like that. It's like no, you cannot zazz this up. It is gruel.
Yeah. The food is bland but nourishing.
Yeah.
That's
it. It is adventurer fuel, basically. Adventurer chow.
It's like oatmeal.
Yes. Turns to dust in your hand as soon as you cross over.
That was magically summoned and created?
Correct. Self, your ball of ice that you're holding in your hand disappears. It is almost like it goes straight from frozen to gas, if that makes sense, and then just goes straight up into the air.
There's a term for that.
I know, I can't remember. I couldn't remember.
Sublimation.
Half nerd inspiration.
Yay. I'm taking. I'm pushing that button.
And Kaskrin, for you. So you hold. You are holding onto this into this wooden spoon.
Yeah.
You cross the threshold. Nothing seems to happen.
Gotcha. I think that that seems pretty conclusive. Where food and water is no bueno in the Deadlands.
Unless it's frog-shaped.
That's definitely the common denominator, for sure.
Do we risk going as fast as we can?
Yeah.
I mean, if we can make the crater in a day...
The good berries are still there.
But we have no water, and I'm slowly drying out.
What do you mean slowly?
And I'm quickly drying out. And that's really the limiting factor.
Without the Admiral Captain, we are nothing.
Yeah.
I would point out, again, what Checker summoned inside is still there. What Val summoned outside is not there.
Interesting.
In 24 hours, when we need food, I'll try summoning again.
Gotcha. All right, Captain. I think you heard the quickly shriveling Admiral. Let's get in there. See if the ship holds.
He nods and... you see him take in a big breath of air to start screaming orders to get kind of the ship moving again. And he stops and leans back into you. Is the Admiral Captain, is he, he's going to unshrivel soon? It is disconcerting. Bad for morale, you see.
That's true. And I got it.
Okay.
And I'm going to, like, shuffle him into the corner a little bit. Where he
just so no one can see him.
Just dump him in the rest of the water. We all drink our fill. Let him rehydrate as long as possible.
I like my solution.
All right. Strap in, everyone. And you once again kind of do a quick turn and head back across the threshold. Whereupon, all of your summoned food disappears.
Lame.
And so, you start your journey again.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, this is your pilot speaking. I would like to welcome you to Reckless Airlines. Our total flight time for this episode is approximately 1 hour, and we will be cruising at an altitude of 2,000 frog stacks. In a little bit, the flight attendants will be by with complimentary clips and excerpts from previous Reckless Attack episodes. We know you have a lot of choices when it comes to 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcasts, and we would like to thank you for choosing ours. If you enjoyed your experience during today's episode, please be sure to fill out the in-flight survey and leave us a rating or review, or tell a friend. Book your next flight with us at www.recklessattack.com, and thank you for listening.
It does not take long for your surroundings to be extremely disorienting. Behind you, you can see the more verdant area that you left behind, the normal world, the trees, etc. But it fades quickly, and this was a fairly flat place before it was decimated by suns falling and ultra giants rampaging, and it is sheer whiteness.
Val at this moment takes out magical Rixian sunglasses that she's prepared for everyone.
Oh, nice. Oh, hell yeah. Checkers looks so cool.
So cool. Everyone all has, and she's trying to make it so it matches their outfit. So what? Like Sal's would be like red or gold, whatever.
Is it their old outfit or their...
Yeah,
it's like their old outfit. She had no idea about the new outfit.
There was no way to know.
And
no
honestly, going in, Selv might have to have his old outfit on because jet black is probably not the best.
He's probably pretty toasty.
That's true. That's probably true. As a reminder, the air, once you re-enter, is thinner. Or at least it's harder to take in enough or feel like you're able to be free with your breaths. And it doesn't take long either for you to start feeling these effects. You all are taking a level of exhaustion. And now we are not using the 5e version of exhaustion. We're using the new D&D next, the new D&D?
2024.
2024 D&D. Totally a normal name for a product. We're using a version of that, which is per level of exhaustion, a few things happen. First, you lose 5 feet off of your maximum speed.
That's bad.
Second, you take a -2 to all d20 rolls. And you take a -1 to your DCs. So your spell DCs or your ability DCs.
Wow, that is brutal for one level of exhaustion.
So -5 movement speed, -2 D20 rolls.
And -1 for spell DCs. Now, one thing to note, and this is, you know, kind of one of those game things. Your game knowledge going to player knowledge. Just existing here, every hour is sapping energy from you. Just little bits at a time. And you have a little bit more than the kind of 5 counter that normal 5e rules have. This version is going to 10 before you die a horrid death. If you take it easy for a given day, don't do any work, don't do any stuff around the ship, that sort of thing, pretty much lay still. Don't even read. You can stave off further levels of exhaustion. But if you, say, go adventuring, or sail a ship, or what have you, it'll tick up just a little bit at a time. And I'm telling you now, long rests do not reset this exhaustion.
Cool.
Not while you're in here.
Yeah.
Jonathan's
nice.
Like, cool, that
yeah,
I like.
Yeah.
Everyone else
yeah,
is
yeah,
like...
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go.
Again, let's haul ass.
From a relaxed position.
Yeah.
Val, kind of like being in tune with her body, like seeing how this is impacting one, would suggest minimal crew and maybe have like...
Rotations.
Yeah, rotations where like the first day, maybe one of the Tims rests, a couple of the Joes. Is this level of exhaustion impacting the bones?
I'm glad you asked. It is notably not. You guys are feeling this. You're dragging a little bit, trying to concentrate, be like, all right, what's happening? What do we got to do? How far is it? And you just hear the burden just like doing whatever the undead equivalent of happy whistling is downstairs, just restacking boxes that he has recently unstacked.
Great. Val will suggest the Seeker learn how to drive the ship.
They are good at seeking
as a backup. So we will be able to get out of here.
Hmm. You trust these creatures?
Absolutely. One of them was a good friend before they passed. They seem unimpacted by the atmosphere here. It's really a failsafe, so we can get out and recover.
Kind of smacks his very dry lips together.
Well, if you remember the crew, you gotta stay busy, so send him up. I'll teach them what they need to know, at least to keep us pointed in the right direction.
How cool does Captain Livingstone look with like an eye patch version of his sun visor? Because one of his eyes is
cybernetic.
He has
broken the sunglasses and now is wearing them as a sunglass monocle. And it's sick.
Oh no, I think Val would have made him a sunglass eye patch that has like a hole in the patch.
Yeah, it's real good.
Okay.
I mean, it is.
Wait, is he wearing just two eye patches now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
and I hear your skepticism, David. Two
like,
eye
why
patches,
would you
what
make
are we
a
doing
sunglasses
here?
For the eye that doesn't work?
Yeah, right. You're
no,
correct.
No, he only has an eye patch
oh,
for his
right.
human eye.
Yeah,
assuming his robot construct eye is fine, doesn't need visor.
Yeah, and he pulls off the double eye patch look
God
in
damn
a way.
I didn't remember that the
that
robot eye was
have.
An eye patch vibe, kind
yeah.
of, like a Mad Eye Moody situation.
Can nothing stop this man's trip?
Again, he's definitely parched right now. he's not feeling good. He doesn't have the same constitution that you guys have.
Is his hair? How does it look now that it's not like that? That like
sleazy, so
like kind of wet, windy look.
Rolling 2d20s. At the moment, unfortunately, it is no longer, yeah, the kind of like sea breeze wet look, but it is billowing in the wind in a way that it usually isn't, that unfortunately does still work.
12 to mutiny.
Blay that mutiny, boy!
So I want to ask a serious game question.
Sure.
How high are we, actually?
That's a great
How
question.
High.
I was gonna,
dude.
Bro.
Ah, dude.
Guys, good news. All the rum's here and our dank stash untouched.
Too bad all of our snacks are sand. Dude. How high are we?
Not that high.
High, how are we?
No, it is actually totally up to you. I meant to ask you guys as you were going. Again, you guys were cruising along several hundred feet. Again, if not 1,000 feet. I mean,
Dave's not here, man.
You,
for those of you who get that reference.
I don't.
Okay. None of us have
been with it. And you could experiment. It doesn't seem like, again, within at least a few hundred feet that the air improves in either direction, unless
okay.
you wanted to kind of go very close to the ground, you know, kind of skid over it, which might change some things, but might change a lot of things as part of that. So it is totally up to you guys. And knowing that this is a place that you probably already, after a few hours of sailing over, have already probably made it farther than anyone has gone and come back to tell the tale.
I would propose that after the first little bit, we stay fairly close to the ground, like even within 50 feet, because we've already had this ship crash once. In case something happens while we're traveling, I don't know that the ship could handle a second emergency crash landing.
But what if it gets worse closer to the ground? Like, what if there's something under the sand that can jump super high? And then also, like, what if Checker shrivels up more?
Have you seen him? He cannot get more shriveled.
Maybe like 100 feet.
Okay.
That's a survivable distance.
So after a little while, you suggest changing the altitude. And under Captain Silvertooth's tutelage, the Seeker is able to, you know, relatively smoothly. It's not the practiced grace. You can feel a difference, but is able to adjust altitude. And that's when the moaning starts.
Up, up, we're going back up! We're going back up!
It doesn't take long.
Immediately, Seeker, back up!
Somehow over Val's cries. You hear a, to call it a chorus might imply too much coordination. A cacophony, perhaps, is the better word, of sounds.
For those who are asking, I am getting the stare of death from my lovely wife, Sophie.
Val staring at Kaskrin.
Dried moans ring out. And from down here, you start noticing stuff. I'll just leave it at stuff for now. But no, what you see is at first glance like a mirage shimmer, you know, where you can kind of see those waves and it looks a little watery. And that's what your brain is telling you. That's what it must be. And your brain is trying really hard to ignore all the ways that it's definitely not that. Because it is in just small flashes here and there of different colors of strange vapors that are just on the edge of your ability to make out. You can't tell, are they making a shape? What shape? Is it different than that one? But every time that one flashes into your vision, you hear... So, you don't even have to roll a perception check for that. You just... That's what you see.
Can I propose we go back up? That was pretty good up there.
The camera turns to pans to everyone on deck. Everyone's hair is standing straight up. Do you head back up?
Yes, please.
Val proposes we go right back where we came from.
You heard the Admiral, Captain. Up, up. That, nope. Really, you can pull up much faster than that. Please.
You guys coast back up to maybe a few feet even higher than you were. Coming
so,
in.
Would need to go on the way out.
Mm-hmm. A question.
Sure.
What are our navigation tools doing?
That's a phenomenal question.
We have compass eye, compasses,
compassions.
Compassions.
Well, we also have a sextant.
Yes, you have a degree. You have a variety of things. Man, you know, it is interesting. Early on, seems to be fine. You know, still pointing the... I haven't made a magnetic pole world-building choice. I'm going to say pointing north, because that's not world-building I'm interested in. Still pointing north, no problem. And a couple hours in, you know, you've been traveling for a good hunk of the day already. The Seeker kind of looks over, as does Captain Livingstone. And the captain kind of taps on the compass, squints. You can barely tell underneath his sunglasses. Taps it again. Kind of looks ahead. Looks at the twin suns, now a little bit kind of above you. Looks behind. Says, hold course best you can. Compass is off. 5 degrees or so. He looks concerned by that fact.
He and Val share a very concerned look. Is Val's compass also off by the same amount?
Yeah.
Okay. Val is going to note that down and make a new heading based on the offset.
Roll me an intelligence check with advantage.
9. My dice are not hot tonight.
No.
After a bit, you realize it's getting worse.
Okay. Val will basically work on a formula for like time to degree. And she would like to drop the barrel that Checkers is no longer in, labeled frog tea, on the ground. Over the edge of the ship.
My tea.
Which is empty.
Which is empty. But okay. That specific barrel.
That specific barrel. Okay.
Mm-hmm. She gets a good look at it. Has Checkers carve a little frog face in it. Make it decorative.
Mm-hmm.
Tosses it over the side.
Okay. And is your goal to see what happens when it hits the ground?
Nope. Or just leave it there.
It's left there. Okay. You see it hit into the ground and not shatter.
Great.
And stay perfectly still.
Perfect.
From several hundred feet up.
Every 900 feet, another decorative barrel drops.
I think Selv would notice that, right?
Val's not hiding this.
No. I know, but would also notice the fact that it hit and didn't like bounce, break, and just kind of like say to himself,
it's like the sand equivalent of the waveless lake.
Kaskrin is manning the telescope because I'm several hours in. It's like, there are no discernible features. And really, the only way we know where we're going is because of the trail of debris that we're leaving behind.
And yeah, and like instinct and hope. That's it.
Yeah. But like the horizon is still the same kind of like bleached white sand as far as we can see. And, Kastrin's like almost desperately looking at this point. Where is this crater?
Could I have the Admiral Captain and Selv and Captain Livingstone and the Seeker make a dexterity saving throw, please, with exhaustion?
Checkers with a 12.
Selv with 18.
All of you, barely in some froggy cases.
I'm so dry.
Pick up on the sounds of shifting earth underneath you. All of you are able to hop out of the way as a small hole forms in the dry earthen deck right at the helm. It doesn't collapse anything. It's actually because you all succeeded. The damage was minimized, but now the Seeker is holding onto the wheel backwards and everyone is spread like 15 feet away. And you look around and see, boy, that grass is pretty dried out and dead now, huh? And that's not the most alive-looking dirt that is now a structural, important part of our ship.
Val will use create or destroy water and make it rain in a 30-foot cube. Does that get the helm and the mast?
Sure.
See what happens.
Gets muddy.
But it rains.
It does rain. And so where the hole was, water
checker's
starts
barrel dripping,
starts dripping in a little bit. The rain barrel, the checker's rain barrel, is able to collect some water. And so,
Self will actually also stand there with his eyes closed and hands out a little bit.
Oh yeah.
Val is like, no, team. We are using this opportunity to mold some earth here, put it back together. Looking at you, Self.
Oh yes, of course.
And I will use mold earth to make patches.
Like you said, luckily Self has already done a very good job of evening this out, so it's pretty quick work to kind of redistribute things quickly. But Livingstone looks at Checkers and is like, Admiral Captain, I worry about our deck. It seemed to be in surprisingly good shape coming in, but I'm a little concerned if it will hold, especially if things get a little stickier than simply driving forward. I think it would make sense for us to work to brace what we have. We have all the supplies on ship, but it would require manpower, which in these conditions is difficult. And of course, we could send the members of the Bones, the Lasting Legion, to work, but then that means their jobs go in need of filling.
So Checkers does his best Val impression, puts on his thinking hat.
Which is, which one of his hats?
It's like a little yellow crown that he got from one of the library events.
Yes.
They brought in all the kids to do like a reading, like a book fair, and he won one of the prizes. This is his thinking cap.
I like the idea that Checkers, A, went to this event for children because, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And then you went and decimated these children. At least one child to get that crown.
Correct.
And it says Junior Librarian on it in a little star. Very covered.
Look at me, Val.
Yeah. But he's doing this little mental calculus, and he's thinking, we need this ship to stay afloat for as long as possible. And the Tims and the Joes are only going to get worse over time, regardless of how much work they do right now. And we need all of us, the Guilders, to be in a decent shape, well enough at least, to go explore this crater if and when we get there. So I think he'll say to Captain Livingstone, it's not going to be fun, but I think we need the Tims and Joes up here to patch as much of this as we can.
Mm.
They'll have to rest afterwards, but we need this ship to make it to the crater.
He nods.
And back.
Hopefully back, yes.
Indeed. That sounds, sound, Admiral Captain. I'll get the men on it, and I'll push them responsibly. All right, downstairs, everyone. And after a little while, you start to kind of hear some muffled thumps of woodwork and that sort of thing. Every once in a while, a bit of mud kind of collapses in. You hear some shouting, oh, hey, well, look, get back up. But work begins. You guys travel for the full day. And eventually, the twin suns fall below the horizon. Eventually, night falls.
Terrifying.
Yep. Yeah, this is awful. This is the worst thing I've ever done.
And, you know, not too much changes. I guess I would say the kind of the first thing that jumps out. All throughout the day, you've been able to see these strange flashes, especially now that you know that they're down there. It's almost hard to ignore them. But night falls. And previously, they were these faint vapors that had a suggestion of color, suggestion of shape. And now, it is like a multicolored aurora is below you. Not so much a wave, but of just little bits of light of essentially every color in the visible spectrum flashing. There is a beauty to it, but it also throws in stark relief a couple of things. One, how many flashes there are. And two, some of these flashes seem bigger than the others. And also, there are no stars in the sky.
That was Val's worry.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Val has a hypothesis.
Mm.
The capital city.
Narhasser.
Are the flashes the souls of the dead?
Who's to say?
Val keeps that terrifying thought to herself. Everyone have a good night.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the dead the souls bite.
Thanks to the very tiring efforts of the Tims and Joes, we're able to start patching up some of the places in your now lightly muddy deck. Not all of it, though. And thanks to the vigilant piloting of the Seeker, you're able to keep things moving in what you hope is the right direction. Val, that equation is... Maybe you just got it wrong. Maybe it was just, you know, math wasn't really your...
Val fucking loves math. Absolutely not.
But it's a little different than you'd think it should be. And it's, you know, it's fine. The Seeker's very good at this. Now, it seems like, you know, she's kind of gotten a hang of it, but it's a little...
It's not a constant. Val will figure it out. She'll make more math.
New math. Dawn breaks. And your exhaustion does not worsen. It does for those working on the deck. They're a little bit more lethargic, a little worse. Great news. You guys have made excellent time. And very soon, maybe for anyone who's up in the crow's nest, anyone who's looking through a telescope, looking at Kaskrin, a call rings out. Crater ahead. With every passing moment, you see something of a scale that does not make sense to your mind. It is something that you can only see because of your elevated position, but it is shattered, jagged rock that juts up hundreds, if not thousands of feet in the air. Almost a mountain range of a perfect circle that goes on, that must have a radius of tens, if not hundreds of miles. A shattered landscape, which is the first new feature that you all have seen in this desert of nothingness after a day of travel. Should we continue the approach? You guys are, of course, still a ways away at this point.
Can any of you with the telescopes make out any, you know, details or good place to land or get through those jagged rocks? Or do we have to go over?
And Kaskrin will try to take a closer look at these rocks, too. I mean, still from this distance, it's hard to make out details. But, you know, are there lights that are kind of covering these in any way? Are they different from the kind of mountains that Kaskrin is used to?
First, it's obvious that these are not natural. They have eroded, certainly, over the decades, but are still sharp and clearly not made in a way that any mountain you've ever encountered has been made. And from this distance and this angle, you can't really get a good look into the crater. So you would have to give an order to ascend to get a better look inside.
Okay.
So even from this distance, flying the Skystalker, it's like we're approaching a solid wall in the distance. This would be completely impassable if we were walking or if we were in anything besides a skyship. But we have the benefit of being able to fly. So Admiral Captain Checkers will give the order to ascend and see if we can find a top or a landing spot along the edge of this crater where the capital city of the Pentarchy used to be.
Kaskrin, where are you in terms of using your eyepiece?
I would say I'm at the front of the ship.
As you ascend, you are kind of straining to look for nooks, crannies, and, you know, there's places you could certainly fly into that are a little lower so you don't have to go all the way over, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But as Checker said, it is kind of a wall of rock. And that's when something catches your eye.
Cool.
It is the same shimmer that you experienced, I will say, yesterday, and that you still see around you this moment. And it takes you a second. It's almost like, I think I've described many things this way in this campaign, but it is true. One of those hidden picture images where it's all squiggles and you have to cross your eyes and, you know, kind of focus and just so for things to snap into place. And David, could you please grab your phone? Because I'm going to send you a message.
Yeah.
Of what you see.
Kaskrin is looking through his prized possession. And as we begin traversing through this craggly, desolate mountain range, Kaskrin looks through his spyglass, and he's able to get just the barest angle of what lays inside. And his jaw clenches. Because what he sees in front of them cannot exist, should not exist. He sees the outline of this enormous, translucent city sitting inside this crater, hovering on invisible, transparent ground hundreds of feet in the air. And he says, the city, it's still there.
And that is where we'll end this week's episode of Reckless Attack.
Oh boy.
Mm. Not in a million years would I have guessed that was what was in the crater.
Nope.
See you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
It's not, it's a little different than you'd think it should be. And it's, you know, it's fine. The Seeker's very good at this. Now, seems like, you know, she's kind of gotten a hang of it, but it's a little.
It's not a constant. Kind of now we'll figure it out. She'll make more math.
New math.
Better math.
Math and eventually, plus. Math 2024.
Yeah. Oof, got him. Yeah. Deep cuts.
Guys, we're no longer a Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
I want to play Math 2024.
Wizards of the Coast has never sent us fucking shit, and they definitely won't now.